You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our North America correspondent, Ronan Seagrave, in Vancouver. He's currently in Vancouver in Canada. Welcome to the show, Ronan.
Good evening, Henry.
Now, look, I just want to mention Chile, because as you know, Ronan, and our listeners would know, Chile is basically on fire at the moment. It's a dreadful situation. We have a correspondent in Santiago, but I can't name him for security reasons. The country is very unstable. Sure. He can't talk on air because he's trying to protect his house from a fire, which is less than an hour away and headed in his direction. But he did send me a text just very briefly. He said, you know, about 100 people have been killed in Chile. And of course, that's a conservative number. As these forest fires rage throughout the country, mostly on the coast, the authorities warning the death toll is likely to rise. The fires are in the coastal region, he says, about an hour's drive away. He said he hasn't been directly affected so far. Government has declared 2 days of national mourning for Monday and Tuesday. And finally, he wrote, fires most probably have to do with the terrorism we have in the south of Chile. And that's his point of view, which is currently under a state of emergency. Alternatively, someone from the radical left, he claims, of which he says we have an abundance, wanting to hit back at the government for one reason or another. And he finally says, least likely is that it was an ordinary, everyday common garden arsonist. It's a dreadful situation, isn't it, Ronan?
Yes, I mean, it has to be said, Henry, that right across North America, this has been an extremely mild winter. I mean, we simply haven't had, even in Canada, you know, the kind of blazing snowstorms and, you know, really long, elongated periods of really deep cold. Where I normally am in Winnipeg, it was about the ninth mildest January in 150 years.
Gosh.
With temperatures way above normal. And this is apparently due to our old friend El Nino.
Yes.
And sort of wind patterns driving particularly sort of hotter than usual temperatures all across the west coast of America and particularly into South America. So it certainly has been, whatever about the sort of terrorism aspect, it certainly has been milder and hotter in Chile than it has been in previous years. I mean, the ministry and sort of official government is saying there's about 92 forest fires burning in the centre and the south of the country.
Ronan, are they prepared for this? I mean, here in Australia, we have bushfires. we have bushfires all the time. We're used to it. It's part of summer, and of course, it's summer here right now. But it's interesting that if they're not used to it, this is a, you know, it's a bit like Britain, you know, last summer and the summer before, having heat waves and lots of people who aren't wealthy, didn't have air conditioning, that sort of thing. Is Chile not prepared, do you think?
No, it simply wouldn't have, Henry, the type of emergency response services that you would see in Canada or in the United States. I mean, people who have been talking to media about this is they haven't seen anything like this in 30 to 40 years. There certainly was no sense of preparedness, Henry, for anything like this happening in January.
Yeah.
You know, whatever about, you know, preparedness perhaps ramping up over the summer months, certainly this was a major surprise to the country, and as I say, just driven by exceptionally warm January temperatures.
Yeah, oh gosh, we wish them the best, of course. Now let's get on to some North American politics. I really need to get a jingle made up, the Trump report. Now, I'm just quoting Politico and this headline, Biden's economy keeps messing up Trump's message, which I'm loving. And he's saying, you can't blame the president when policies go wrong. This is a reporter from Politico. And then say he's not responsible if things are going right. The economy is doing quite well in North America, Ronan.
Yes, it is. And listeners might remember that in the last presidential election, of course, this one's turning into a rematch, Trump said that there would be a 1929 stock market collapse. The minute that Biden took over as president. Now, I believe, Henry, the stock market has hit several times, I think, last week, record highs.
Yeah.
So clearly that hasn't happened. He said that Biden would be a job-killing president. Well, he's created far more jobs
Than in the
than
Trump
Donald
period
Trump.
from 2016, yeah.
So, I think the argument for Donald Trump that the economy's been a disaster is a weak one. Now, having said that, Henry, there's always imbalances across states and how
Of course.
folk are doing in different states with the old
Yeah.
electoral college system. But I
Sure.
think Trump has been in his more sane moments, sort of, vacillating between sort of the immigration issue and border chaos and that type of thing. I think if he goes after Biden and the economy, that isn't a particularly powerful message for him in terms of that, probably resonating with voters.
Yeah, I just want to mention again from Politico, the labour market added 353,000 jobs in January, blowing away expectations and marking the 36th straight month of job gains under Biden. The stock market has hit a series of record highs, to your point, Ronan, and workers' wages are once again beginning to outpace the rate of inflation. How do you think this will go? This, in November for the federal election, how do you think it's going to go? Because a lot of people, I mean, crikey, is it possible Trump could? Because Biden is doing very well, but do Americans recognize that? Because they're watching a lot of right-wing media.
I'm not sure that enough of them do, Henry. I not in normal circumstances, in the good old days when the Republican Party was not taken over by Trumpism. Generally, when a first-term president was going for re-election and had economic numbers like this, the re-election would be almost sort of guaranteed, Henry. The economy's, remember Bill Clinton in the 90s, the economy was doing well, he won
Yes.
re-election easily. Obama, in
Yeah, both
2012,
had
the
two
economy
terms.
had recovered.
Both had two terms, and Trump has only had one, and that really pissed him off.
I mean, I think the other tack that I think Trump is going to take is probably what's happening internationally, and we've obviously had a fairly serious outbreak of US military action on two different, if related, fronts here. With Trump saying, no more wars, not, he's the man who can solve these problems in 24 hours, Middle East peace, war in Ukraine. But we've had, first of all, US combined with the UK military action against the Houthis, who are
Yes.
an Iranian-backed, Yemeni-based group, been sort of fighting a long-running and quite frankly awful civil war in Yemen, but they've been attacking shipping in the Red Sea, supposedly in support of Hamas and the situation in Gaza. And then the second front has been yet again Iranian-backed militia groups, terrorist groups in both Iraq and Syria. What was interesting today, Henry, today being Sunday in North America, we've had sort of the lunchtime political shows that the networks run. And Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, was doing the rounds of the TV studios and perhaps somewhat ominously didn't rule out potential US strikes within Iran. I don't believe Iran has any desire whatsoever to get into a war with the US, but clearly if strikes within Iran were being contemplated, that would be a thing, a big ratcheting up of the ante here. So Trump is going to use that stuff that,
Oh,
we're back
yes.
again with US presidents, bombing and getting involved in the Middle East and conflicts in the Middle East. And there was none of that apart from dealing with ISIS in Trump's presidency. And of course, he's the man that will bring about, instantly settlements both in relation to Gaza and in relation to the
Yeah,
war in
right.
Ukraine,
Yeah, right.
which is not going to happen, but
Reuters reports, and on the subject of Houthis in Yemen, US Britain wage strikes against Iran linked to Houthis in Yemen. Of course, the United States and Britain launched strikes against 36 Houthi targets. That's quite a lot in Yemen on Saturday, in the second day of major US operations against Iran-linked groups following a deadly attack on American troops last weekend. And they said this is not going to end anytime soon, Ronan.
No, it's not. I think that the situation, first of all, the situation in the Red Sea, the ultimate military objective there is to prevent and decommission or effectively wipe out any capability of the Houthis to launch missile attacks on civilian shipping going through. I mean, this is having a devastating effect, Henry. And we are all going, the longer this goes on, we're all going to feel it as consumers, as shipping is forced to reroute away from the Red Sea, which does add hundreds, if not thousands, of miles
Yeah,
to the journey.
but you know, it's funny. I never even knew where Houthi, sorry, where this place is. You know, I know about Yemen, but it's like the Houthi people have just come out of nowhere with this, and it's all
Well,
you mentioned Iran is backing. Iran's doing a lot of saber rattling. There's no doubt about it. I wonder, do they mean business? And you know, a lot of people around the world are going, oh, is that where I get my food from, you know?
exactly. You know, the Red Sea is like the Panama Canal, you
Yes.
know, an absolutely key shipping route that shaves off, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of miles of using alternatives. Yemen has been in the midst of a long-running civil war, which really, Henry, has been a sort of proxy war between the Houthis, backed by Iran, and the government, backed by Saudi Arabia. And lots of arms have been pouring in from both of those countries to both sides. Now, there's been a recent sort of rapprochement of some sort between Saudi Arabia and Iran that has kind of dialed back the civil war, but the Houthis have now refocused their attentions again, they say, in support of Hamas on disrupting and literally firing rockets. Let's be clear about this: firing rockets
Yes.
at civilian shipping. And the objective here of the US and the UN is to put a stop to that, to take out military assets and the capability of the Houthis to continue to launch these attacks.
Do you think they'll be successful? And I just again want to quote Reuters. This was the latest sign of spreading conflict in the Middle East, which of course is having a problem between Israel and Gaza. Since the war erupted between the Israelis and Hamas after the militant Palestinian group's deadly assault on Israel on October 7th, this is spreading throughout the Middle East. That's very dangerous.
Yes, it is. And again, the principal country at the axis of this is Iran. I mean, it's got to be said that there is no greater country in the world backing terrorism and these kind of groups than Iran. They have, as I say, terrorist militia groups in Syria, in Iraq. We've had sort of Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad in Lebanon, where frankly, you know, Hezbollah, Henry, is probably better armed than many countries as a sort of Iranian terrorist satellite. So Iran has been doing this for years. It's been ratcheting up. I mean, they were also obviously involved along with Qatar in funding and arming Hamas. So they are arguably the main protagonists here. Now, as I say, I do not, it's inconceivable to believe that Iran wants to get into any kind of, and that seems to be the rhetoric coming out of the country. That, well, there's a bit of saber rattling saying they're ready for anything. I think, no, they don't want that. If, however, the US attacks were to, and these were designated for security reasons, were to actually involve strikes within Iran, I think that would be a significant ratcheting up of tensions here and further inflame a risk. I think striking Iranian-backed groups in Syria and Iraq doesn't, but it's a concern. I don't think would create anything near the level of concern than Iran did. Now, funny enough, this is causing the Iraqi president and leadership issues. I mean, Iraq is Henry. There's been a lot of interference by Iran in Iraq since the Iraq War, in the invasion by the US in 2003, which has essentially been trying to broker peace and stability between Shia and Sunni Muslims. Now, this has a real potential to unravel some of this, given the Iranian backed groups are Shia.
I've been saying this for years. How come the United Arab Emirates and other places in, these incredibly rich countries,
Places I know
Ronan,
well, Henry,
why are they? And I saw someone on the media mentioning it, and I'm thinking, about bloody time someone talks about this. It's the elephant in the room. These are billion dollar countries, billions of dollars making, selling oil around the world. Why are they being so quiet in the UAE and other stable countries, let's say, in the Middle East?
I think for a number of reasons, Henry. I think
Trade?
trade is one economic reasons. I mean, the direction of travel, Henry, with these Gulf states, UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait, and to some degree Saudi Arabia, has definitely been economic, and also a direction of travel with strengthening ties with Israel. We've had obviously the Abraham Accords, which, let's face it, was probably the one achievement by the Trump administration, where formal diplomatic relations were established with Gulf states. Now, it's believed that Hamas timed its attack on October the 7th on the eve or a day or two where perhaps a similar accord was going to be announced between Israel and Saudi Arabia. But there are a lot of informal ties. And these countries, Henry, have been anxious for some time to establish more formal relations with Israel. They see tremendous business and economic opportunities in doing so. To be quite frank, they are sick and tired and frankly past caring about the Palestinian situation. Qatar is the one country that's got involved in terms of funding and Hamas leadership being in Qatar. But really and truly, they're sick of it. They look at sort of history over the last 30, 40 years of Yasser Arafat and others repeatedly rejecting sort of agreements or attempts, particularly by Bill Clinton over 20 years ago, to get a sort of permanent settlement. They understand the role of Iran in relation to, and again, the Shia Sunni issue comes into play here. But I think the rest of the Western world needs to realize these countries really do not care about this. There's absolutely no chance, any possibility they're going to intervene in relation to Israel's military operations in Gaza. Not a chance.
Yeah, even though it's in their own backyard.
Fruto sagrado nos del pehuel. Ay, nacerás mi niño y me harás dichosa. Serás el más hermoso, mi buen peñel. Mi Yahweh te pondremos como tu abuelo. Serás sano y robusto como de ser pehuenche. Tu tierra noble y bella siempre amarás. Honrarás a tu raza y antepasados. Nuestra lengua y costumbres conservarás. Los árboles, cultivos, los animales. Protegerás, serás un hombre digno y respetado. Quien enciende desde arriba te guiará.
You've just joined us. I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave, who is currently in Vancouver in Canada. I want to switch subjects now. Excuse me. Sinn Féin, says HuffPost. Sinn Féin, Irish nationalist to lead Northern Ireland's government for the first time. This is a telling thing, isn't it, Ronan? After we're old enough to remember that they were and possibly are the political wing of the IRA, and here we go.
Yes, I mean, this all goes back, Henry, over 2 years ago, which were the last elections held to the Northern Ireland Assembly. And since then, we've had, until really in the last week, we've had sort of 2 years of stalemate. And the first thing about the election was that for the very first time, Sinn Féin won the largest share of the vote and became the largest party, so supplanting the Democratic Unionist Party. That meant, in terms of the complex Good Friday Agreement and power sharing arrangements that were in place, that the Sinn Féin would hold the office of First Minister and the DUP would be Deputy First Minister, kind of reversing, Henry, of what had been the pattern beforehand. But
of course, the Unionists were boycotting this.
Well, yes, the issues over the past 2 years have all revolved around Brexit. They've revolved around something called the Northern Ireland Protocol, which was around trying to avoid, with the UK leaving the EU, trying to avoid custom checks and the imposition of a hard border in Ireland. I won't bore listeners with the long and torturous history of this, but suffice to say, over the past year, the UK government has agreed something called the Windsor Framework in relation to the EU around changes to those arrangements. There, following that, there's then been a series of lengthy meetings and negotiations with the DUP, and finally they came to an agreement at the end of last week where the DUP agreed to return to Stormont and to establish a new Northern Ireland executive.
And let's not forget the Good Friday Peace Accord in 1998, of which the Irish Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, in fact, I can't remember who it was, but Tony, who was it, do you know? Bertie Ahern, and of course Tony Blair was Prime Minister of Britain back in 98. Now, I just want to quote Sinn Féin's Vice President Michelle O'Neill. She was nominated, as you mentioned, as First Minister in the government under the terms of the Good Friday Peace Accord, believe it or not. She writes or says, "The days of second-class citizenship are long gone. Today confirms they are never coming back," she said. "As an Irish Republican, I pledge cooperation and genuine, honest effort with those colleagues who are British, of a unionist tradition, and who cherish the union. This is an assembly for all, Catholic, Protestant, and dissenter." Does she tell the truth about this? Well, are her feelings genuine?
It's very flowery rhetoric, Henry.
Sure is.
Sinn Féin has as its core objective a united Ireland. Now, it has to be said, Henry, in the decades since the Good Friday Agreement, there's been a real shift in the Irish Republic. I think very few people there really couldn't give a damn about a united Ireland. In fact, probably look at it, Henry, as more hassle, trouble and cost than it would be worth. And you're trying to force unionists into a state. I think most people in the public just don't really have any interest in this, but it remains core to Sinn Féin.
Yeah, I think that people just, you know, everything's going okay. The IRA are basically a broken organisation. Every now and again, they'll flare up for 5 minutes and then they're thumped down, which is fantastic. And I think the people are going, don't mess with this. Just leave it as it is, you know?
No, we've got something that is complex but can work in Northern Ireland. The interesting thing here, Henry, is that now, just to be clear for international listeners, there is the First Minister and the Deputy First Minister, but actually within the Good Friday Agreement and legally, they're of equal rank, Henry. And a lady who, the new Deputy First Minister, who's from the Democratic Unionist Party, is a lady called Emma Little-Pengilly. She was very quick to say that they were of equal rank. But what's interesting here, Henry, is it's two women now holding these roles for the first time in
Interesting.
Northern Ireland. Miss Pengilly has an interesting history. She's 44, a barrister. She's spoken about her family home being damaged by a bomb in their village in 1991 during the Troubles. But her father was a guy called Noel Little, who was one of known as the Paris Three, who was arrested in the 1980s for arms trafficking for the Loyalist Ulster Resistance Group. So there's a bit of history, perhaps not totally dissimilar from Sinn Féin. How these two women will work together, Henry, we're going to find out. As I say, Miss Pengelly, as Miss Little Pengelly, has only been a member of Stormont since 2015, and frankly, not other than what I'm telling you, not a whole lot is known about her.
Now, an open border between the North and the Republic of Ireland was a key pillar of the peace process that ended what we call the Troubles. So checks were imposed instead between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. Interestingly, Gerry Adams was in the gallery there. Now, just for anyone who doesn't know, he was the former Sinn Féin president, and he sort of. I find him an interesting character because he was fraternal, unlike Margaret Thatcher. At least we thought so. He helped broker the historic peace agreement and was in the gallery at the assembly to see O'Neill's nomination. Haven't heard from him for ages.
Well, he's still quite active on social media. I mean, there's a school of thought. I mean, Sinn Féin is a party that styles itself as an All-Ireland party. So the actual leader of the party nationally is a lady called Mary Lou McDonald, who's a member of Parliament in the Republic and from Dublin, and she succeeded Gerry Adams. There was no vote on this, by the way, Henry, just to be clear about it. There was just some emergent, some decisions made by people in a smoky back room. That she became the leader. But there's a lot, school of thought, Henry, that Gerry Adams and perhaps a few other shadowy figures in Belfast are the ones really still calling the shots in the party. Adams has been more active recently, talking about taking a very kind of pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, where actually there are some historic links, Henry, position, and he's been more talking about that than matters in Northern Ireland more recently. But he remains a sort of active figure on social media, commentating, as I say, on various events more internationally than to do with Ireland.
It's interesting to see how things are going to go with Sinn Féin, getting this seat in Parliament. And the thing about us Irish, Ronan, is that we never really believe anything's going to happen. And it's fair enough that we have that point of view because we've seen all this before. Not the technical change of government and that kind of thing, but we've seen all the rhetoric, all the people talking about Northern Ireland. Do you feel confident about this?
I think, Henry, that hopefully again this time that there's a realization in Northern Ireland that its citizens and its voters deserve a functioning government. I mean, I think, if they're going to and having elections for an assembly, that assembly should meet and it should, with the complex, what's known as the Dáil format around power sharing, should form a government. So I think there's a kind of an obligation and duty to voters. I think everybody was just getting sick and tired of the DUP and, the old kind of saying no to everything. And, at least now they've been brought back into government. It seems like the two women heading this are probably a bit more technocratic, and perhaps that's a recipe for success. They're going to appoint a new cabinet on Monday, which will consist of a mix of DUP, Sinn Féin, Alliance, and one Ulster Unionist cabinet member. So hopefully, Henry, this does last. I mean, there'll have to be, again, elections within another 2 years, because they've spent 2 years not sitting and not doing anything.
Yes.
But hopefully we can get... I mean, I think the other thing that's clearly on Sinn Féin's mind and focus is there's going to be a general election in the Irish Republic next year.
Oh.
And Sinn Féin has, you know, sort of gone up and down a bit at the polls. I mean, really, they're at the same level of support as they were as the last election, which was in February 2020. Mm. You know, they have a desire, obviously, to do better in the next election and to potentially form part of, for the first time, a government in the Irish Republic. That remains to be seen. I think a certain increasing mood has come across the Irish electorate that they've been flirting a bit too much with populism.
Absolutely.
Not offering kind of serious solutions to complex problems.
And as we've mentioned before, it's the young folk who never, you know, were not born when the Troubles happened in Northern Ireland, and Sinn Féin, as you say, is populist. Ronan, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
It's a pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
That's Ronan Seagrave, our man in Canada. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Hello, everybody. This is Henry from Bondi Tunes International. You're listening to our two-hour weekly chat show. But hey, we also have a music show called Bondi Tunes Plus. Music from the 40s to the 90s, airing on this station. It's a big random party that spans five decades, from Nat King Cole to the Backstreet Boys and everything else in between. It's a lot of fun, so make sure you check your station's schedule and look out for the Bondi Tunes Plus show. I'm currently in the 40s, so I'm off to the dance hall. See ya. This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting into Europe and North America. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. Now, we all know that there are fires raging around Chile, and I contacted two people there. Take a listen. And I'm joined by Jacob Strong and his partner Oswaldo, who are in Chile for us. Welcome to the show, guys. I just want to ask you, from the get-go, when did you guys suddenly realize that Chile was on fire, basically? What was the moment you realized, and how did you react?
Okay, well, for a while now, Chile has had a lot of wildfires in the north and in the south, and we're sort of in between that, and we hadn't really experienced any fires in this area while we've been here. But for me, when I realized something was wrong, I was actually sitting on the toilet. We have a little outhouse by a little creek, and it's very dry here right now, 35 degree days. And I just heard Oswaldo screaming my name, saying, "Jake, there's a fire." So I just pulled my pants up and ran out to go and help stop the fire. But we couldn't stop it. We were only able to...
Oswaldo is with you. Hello, Oswaldo. I just want to differentiate a couple of things here. There is fires all over Chile, but you had a separate fire that sort of came close to your house. Isn't that right?
Yep, that's right. When you were asking when we realized of the fires, for me, it was actually about 3 days ago, because we watched the news every day in the morning, and I watched on the news that the fires were in the fifth region in Chile, which is Viña del Mar.
You are from Chile, Oswaldo.
Yeah.
And have you seen this in your young lifetime before?
Not really. No, never. We have had fires before in Valparaiso, but never this big. I think this is...
And And
Where I remember.
Jacob, I do believe that over 100 people have perished from these fires. And according to, we have a correspondent over there as well, but I couldn't get hold of him. And he said that, the authorities are saying that this is not going to end anytime soon. I mean, the terms of the death toll.
Yeah, that's right. So over 100 people have actually died in these fires, and over 300 people are still missing, not found. And it was updated, and it's over 400.
How long are you guys there for?
Well, right now we're thinking about staying for 6 months.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, then we'll leave for a few months, and then we'll come back. Yeah, and keep working on it.
Right, and I want to talk to you actually just on a side note. You guys cleaned out a well. What is that about?
Yeah, well, when I got here, Osvaldo and his father, along with his uncle, they were building a house from the ground up on this beautiful piece of land with lots of trees and lots of long grass. And the only way to get water here was to dig a well. There's no connections to electricity or water, so it's a very rural area, about 40 minutes from the nearest town.
Oh my God.
So a couple of months ago, they dug a well, which I think is about 6 meters deep, about 5 meters deep. And then when I arrived, they had taken a break of about 1 month. And so they hadn't been here for a while. During that time, a couple of little animals like frogs, lizards, and two rats found their way into the well and couldn't get out. So we had to empty the well, wash the walls, wait for it to fill up a little bit, clean out that water, and now we're drinking from it. Now we've got some fresh water. It's
That
wonderful.
kind of that that really scares me, the thought of that. I've been thinking, oh, really? But I admire you for your courage in doing that because you sound very confident that the water is clean. Now I'm talking with Jacob, who's actually from Australia, and Osvaldo is local there. I was wondering, Jacob, being from a country here in Australia, we are known. Well, we're very aware of bushfires. Did that help you in any way? Because I know neither of us have probably been involved in a bushfire in Australia, but we are much more aware than country people in countries like Britain. Did you find that it was less of a surprise because you're so familiar with bushfires?
That's a hard question. I'm definitely well aware of fires that happen in Australia and how dangerous they can be, but I'm born and raised in the city, so I haven't
Of
had much
course.
to do with them. And all I've got is the information there's that they spread fast, and you gotta call the fire brigade as soon as possible before they get out of control. And yeah, I was certainly not prepared for how quickly this one spread, because we called the fire brigade very quickly. We were able to slow the fire down enough so that it passed our house, but we couldn't stop it, and it continued for acres and acres. And there are these hills off in the distance that I'm looking at now. And within an hour and a half, trees, like the pine forests there, were up in flame. There was just this big mushroom cloud of smoke off in the distance.
I'm just wondering, Osvaldo grew up there. I'm just wondering, you mentioned that you don't have water and you don't have electricity. Is this a general thing or is it because of the fires?
Oh no, it's only in this area, in this piece of land that I just bought about 2 years ago. But we have electricity and water in like all Chile, in the cities and
Yeah.
even some like suburbs. But where I bought the piece of land, it's very, very rural, and like civilization is just starting, I guess. Yeah.
Right. And do you know how long this is going to go on for? I talked to a correspondent there in Chile, in Santiago. I'm not sure. Actually, where are you? Are you close to Santiago?
We are about like 4 hours driving to the south from Santiago, about think 400 or
okay, you
450
really you really are in a rural area. So how long do you, guys think this is going to go on? Or does anyone know?
Well, to be very, very honest, I think it's very clear that the weather is just way too hot. The wind is very, very strong at the moment, and that combination makes it seem that it's gonna last.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tune. Henry
O'Donovan. If you have just joined us, this is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry, reporting from Sydney in Australia. We're talking about the wildfires in Chile, and the death toll has reached over 100, and the authorities say it's expected to rise dramatically. Our own correspondent in Santiago could not contact us because he was busy protecting his own home from fire. But I did manage to get hold of some people in Chile. They're actually friends I know very well. Let's return to that conversation now with both Osvaldo and Jacob. And I'm just wondering how, Jacob, how your mom and dad and your friends and family reacted when they saw on as number one news bulletin here in Australia, when they saw that you were in Chile and this fire, these massive fires broke out. How did your family react, Jacob?
Yeah, well, actually, Susan, my auntie, was the first person to contact me, and I had done all that I could do. I had just finished digging holes in the ground around our neighbor's house, which actually prevented the fire from getting the house, and that also slowed the fire down enough until the firefighters came down and actually stopped the fire in that area. I then came back to rest at our house, and I looked at my phone, and I had received a message from Susan saying, "Hey Jake, are you anywhere near the fires?" And so I just had to call her, and I told her exactly what had happened, and she was shocked. She couldn't stop saying, "Oh my god." But the fires that she had seen were all about Viña del Mar. Of course, they are the most populated, that's the most populated area that has been affected by fires, but of course they're also affecting us in rural areas.
Can I sorry, I will let you guys go in a minute. Thank you so much for spending this time with us here on Bondi Tunes International. I just want to know, given that you're restricted there, to say the very least, what do you do during the day in this particular time?
Well, we actually got here with the intention of building the house, finish the process of building the house. And we are still working on the inside of the house. We only have the walls for outside and the roof, and we can already live here. But we want to install the walls and the ceiling inside, and, you know, make this place comfortable, because we want to spend, like, hopefully every year, every, I don't know, spring in Chile.
Yeah.
So we're every day busy just working on the house.
Aside from the fires, it is a beautiful location. But for the last 2 days, we have been racing to fires on the back of trucks with buckets full of water and shovels. Trying to slow. Yeah. Yeah. We have been we have been firefighters for the past 2 days, just trying to slow it down enough before the bomberos get here, the firefighters get here, and there are helicopters in the sky and planes dropping water on us.
And of course, it's the whole community that is trying to help. Because, you know, if you try to help one house, you are helping everyone.
Just yesterday, we broke into our neighbor's backyard to get water from their pool to stop a fire. And yeah, everybody's here. Everybody's helping.
Where were your neighbors? I'm just intrigued. Were they there?
Well, actually, because it's such a rural area, a lot of people, I think, are building homes here, you know, at times. And they've probably got a second home. It might be a holiday house here.
Yeah.
Or a lot of them are holiday houses, so a lot of people are not here right now. So, yeah, we have to just get water where we can.
Do you guys feel of? I mean, you're talking about being on the back of trucks. Do you have the right gear? Like, do you have helmets or fire gear, or do you just go the way you are?
Well, we've got shovels and
Yeah.
boots, sunglasses and hats.
That's it.
That's about all. Yeah. Oh, but one of our neighbors has this big tank, about probably 100 liters, 1,000 liters of water, and a fire hydrant hose. And when we see a fire in the distance, they are always there, and we just help them.
Osvaldo, do you feel that the emergency services are coping okay in Chile?
I get that feeling today. Today was a good day. We saw like a big fire from the distance. We got there and like all the services were like more than okay. They were really, really good. But I couldn't, I won't say the same about yesterday. Yesterday was the first big fire in this area, and I think they took a long time to really get here, and that's why the fire spread so fast. It burned 250 hectares.
Gosh. Right. Did you have access to media? Like you mentioned no electricity, so I'm guessing, I mean, how do you charge up your phones and stuff like that? Have you got, where do you do that?
We got solar panels, only enough for like to charge our phone batteries and light. And we also have a generator that we use for the fridge and like to charge like the rest of the devices.
Wow. Okay. Well, it sounds like you guys are going to be there for a while. I wish you both the best. And oh, just before I go, Jacob, you mentioned that Sky News are Sky News. Gee, I got competition here. Sky News are interested in you guys.
Oh yeah, I got a an email from one of the producers, and they just asked if we could, or if I could be interviewed for first something. I don't know. I don't watch Sky News, but with Stephen Stefanovic or somebody. And I said, oh yes, I can do it, but I had realized that the time they wanted to interview me had already passed because I was fighting another fire. So I
Oh,
might have missed the option for that interview.
you're. Did they want you to do television? And where are you at with that now?
They wanted to do a Zoom interview with, yeah, good lighting, so my face would be on Sky News.
What's happening there? What's the
Yeah.
result? What's going to happen?
So just before I saw your text message, I had just sent off another email to their producer saying, sorry, I missed this time. We can do it tomorrow. You'd still like to catch up. And then I saw
Fantastic.
your text and we're up in this call.
Well,
Yeah.
look, I'll let you guys go. Obviously, you're going to be on TV next. To both of you, I wish you both the best. Stay safe, Jacob Strong and Osvaldo, there in Chile. Thank you so much for joining us here on Bondi Tunes International.
Thanks, Henry. It was lovely hearing from you. Thank
And
you, Henry.
I'll see you guys when you come back for a visit, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, cheers, bye.
All those lonely, 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 lonely. phone, no one's answering. Well, can't you just let it ring a little longer, longer, longer? Oh, I'll just sit tight through shadows of the night. Let it ring forevermore.
Écoutez Bondi Tunes depuis Sydney en Australie et partout dans le monde. Le soleil ne se couche jamais sur Bondi Tunes.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now. Bongelico,
we've got you covered. The Beatles again, this time with A Hard Day's Night, inspiring another spoken Shakespearean cover, but this time the complete opposite of the Shatner piece, being used for comic purposes brilliantly by Peter Sellers. The Beatles obviously loved it. Sellers performed it on television in 1965 with the group on a show called The Music of Lennon and McCartney, rendering it in the style of a Laurence Olivier soliloquy from Olivier's Richard III. His subsequent recording of the piece made the top 20 in the UK and is remembered as one of his funniest recordings.
It has been a hard day's night, and I have been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log, but when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel all right. You know I work all day to get you money to buy you things, and it's worth it just to hear you say you are going to give me everything. That's why I love to come home, 'cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you, holding me tight, tight. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the thing that you do will make me feel all right.
while home in my head now, and wonder what dress to wear now, and say a little prayer for you.
Sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.